Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive.
Great to be here.
So just take a second with us and, look around, glance at the headlines, maybe listen to the political debates, or even just scroll through your newsfeed.
Yeah, what's the feeling you get?
Exactly. For a lot of us, I think it's this sense of, constant crisis, right? There's this headline-grabbing rhetoric that just seems to get louder every day.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this nagging feeling that global leadership is struggling to keep up with how complex everything is now.
It certainly feels that way sometimes. You see these powerful figures making huge choices, saying things that just ripple out across the globe.
And sometimes it leaves you feeling, not more informed, maybe more confused, bewildered even.
Yeah, like you're missing something fundamental.
Right. So if you felt kind of weary of the usual political back and forth, feeling like we're stuck in this loop of conflict and maybe short-term thinking, you are definitely not alone.
Not at all. It's a common feeling.
Which is why today we're diving into something I think is really resonant. It's a deep dive into a different approach to global leadership, one that doesn't just critique what's happening now, but actually offers a path forward.
A constructive path.
Exactly. We're going to explore these really powerful concepts, awakened governance and awakened diplomacy.
Key terms for today, definitely.
Our mission, really, for this deep dive is to unpack these ideas. They were pioneered by Sandeep Mehra and the Awakened Leadership Movement,
mm-hmm.
and they propose this fundamental shift in how we think about leadership, how we practice it, how we even experience it. It's about moving beyond just reacting to crises.
Getting ahead of them, or maybe operating from a different level entirely.
Yeah, maybe. To really tackle these huge, complex challenges humanity faces and, maybe shape a more hopeful, more aligned future. It sounds ambitious, I know.
It does, but the source material argues it's necessary, not just theory, but like you said, a blueprint.
Right. And what makes this, I think, particularly useful is that the insights we're going to unpack are really designed to cut through all that noise we just talked about.
Yeah, offering some clarity in the confusion.
Exactly. Our main source for this discussion, the lens we're using, is from excerpts from Crisis of Political Governance, Cards, Dictatorships, and Awakened Diplomacy by Sandeep Mehra.
And it's really a foundational text for this whole perspective.
It really is. So we're going to dig into its core arguments, pull out those, nuggets of insight, and see how they apply practically to what's happening right now.
So for anyone listening who's trying to make sense of the world, its leaders, maybe even their own role, this is kind of a shortcut to understanding a really vital new way of thinking.
We hope so. We want to give you not just information, but maybe some of those aha moments. Moments that shine a light on what's really going on.
And importantly, what a more conscious path forward might actually look like.
Okay, so let's start by really unpacking this current situation, this global landscape. Because the source material, it doesn't hold back, does it?
Not at all. It comes out swinging right from the start.
It really does. It states pretty starkly that the crisis of political governance is no longer a theoretical concern. It has become the lived reality of our times.
Wow. So not just academic talk.
No, exactly. It's saying this is what we're all experiencing every day. The constant geopolitical tension, these conflicts that seem like they'll never end.
The feeling that decisions made thousands of miles away are directly impacting your life.
Right. And we see leaders with this huge, almost unbelievable amount of power, making decisions that change everything for whole nations.
Yet their words, their choices, sometimes they reveal just how fragile things are underneath, how superficial the foundations of that governance might be.
That's a good way to put it, like watching this giant, solid-looking building, but then you get up close and realize the pillars are, made of sand, not rock.
Yeah, that captures it. And what's really crucial here, and the source really hammers this home, is that the real crisis isn't that we lack systems. It's not that we don't have democratic frameworks or international bodies or diplomacy.
We have all those things, right? Decades, centuries of building them.
Exactly. Those structures are mostly still there.
Mm-hmm.
The core issue, according to the source, is a lack of clarity, restraint, and alignment within those who lead them.
Okay, hold on. A lack of clarity, restraint, and alignment within the leaders.
Precisely. Think about that. The machinery, the institutions, they're largely intact. But the consciousness, the inner state of the people running that machinery, That's what's often compromised, or, as the source puts it, kind of missing in action.
So the governance system itself has sort of drifted off course, lost its way from why it was set up in the first place.
That's the argument, that it's drifted from its original purpose, which was fundamentally about safeguarding trust, ensuring continuity, fostering well-being for everyone. It's a big misdirection from its core reason for being.
So just to be clear, we're not saying the political infrastructure, the systems themselves are broken beyond repair. It's more about the human element, the leaders operating it.
That's the key distinction the source makes. It's less about the design of the machine, more about the, let's say, consciousness or maybe the inner alignment of the drivers.
Okay.
And the source paints this picture, it's quite concerning really, where governance starts to look more like a performance of power.
A performance, as opposed to genuine stewardship.
Exactly. So instead of a leader working for the common good, what you often see is someone playing a strategic game. Influence becomes like a card to be played.
A card? Like in poker?
Sort of. A tactic in a zero-sum game, right?
Yeah.
Used for personal gain or national advantage, not necessarily for mutual respect or building something together.
And authority.
Authority, which ideally should come from service and wisdom,
yeah,
be used responsibly.
Yeah.
It gets mistaken for just raw strength, an end in itself, disconnected from any moral anchor.
So it suggests leaders have almost forgotten why governance exists, the fundamentals.
That's the implication, a kind of amnesia. It becomes more about the show, projecting control, looking dominant, rather than actually serving humanity.
This is where the source uses some really powerful and maybe controversial examples to show this shift. It doesn't shy away from real quotes.
No, it uses them very specifically.
It points to two remarks by former U.S. President Donald Trump. And it's careful to say, look, this isn't about him specifically, but about what these remarks show us about the state of leadership globally.
Right, using them as illustrations of a wider trend.
The first one was about U.S.-China relations. He said, we are going to have a great relationship with China. They have some cards. We have incredible cards, but I don't want to play those cards. If I did, that would destroy China.
Whew. Yeah. Stark language.
Very. And the second remark the source highlights came when he was responding to accusations of being dictatorial.
Right. I remember this one.
He said, they say he's a dictator. A lot of people are saying, maybe we'd like a dictator. I don't like a dictator. I'm not a dictator. I'm a man with great common sense and a smart person.
Okay. Again, very telling language in the context of governance.
No, it's really, really important we stress what the source says here. The goal isn't partisan politics. It's not about analyzing the specific context or the individual.
No, the instruction is clear. Move beyond the who and the when.
Exactly. Focus on what they signify in the deeper story of global political leadership. These are presented as universal examples, symptoms of a global shift in tone, something happening everywhere, not just in one country.
They're treated as symptomatic, not unique events, which then opens up these huge questions.
Right. What do statements like that signify? The source really unpacks this, asking us to think about what makes today's leadership think in this manner.
Is it strategy or something deeper, like a psychological drive?
And then what kind of relationships are nations building with one another? Are they based on real respect or just shifting power dynamics?
Hmm. And crucially, what clarity do global leaders truly hold within themselves? That goes right to the interstate, the consciousness we were talking about.
It does. And finally, what kind of decision-making now defines political governance? Are decisions about the long-term, the collective good? Or are they reactive, short-sighted, just about winning?
These aren't simple questions. They cut right to the core of leadership's ethical and conscious foundation.
And the impact of this kind of language, it's not just talk, is it? It has real consequences.
Absolutely, not just talk. Tangible consequences.
When leaders talk about holding cards that could destroy another nation, I mean, that just fundamentally changes what diplomacy is supposed to be about.
It's a massive shift. It moves away from cooperation, finding common ground, building understanding.
And turns it into what? A high-stakes game. Strategy, leverage, threats.
Exactly. A zero-sum game mentality.
Yeah.
My win has to be your loss. Instead of seeing the world stage as a place where we could actually create shared prosperity, shared security together.
It sounds less like statesmanship and more like, well, high-stakes poker, as you said.
Yeah. And the source is equally sharp about the second example. When dictatorship enters the political chat, even just rhetorically.
Even if it's being dismissed or joked about.
Even then. The source says it signals something deeper. A cultural longing for control over collaboration. For authority over shared governance.
Wow. A cultural longing, that's a strong claim.
It is. But think about it. It suggests this subtle, maybe unconscious, yearning for a strong man, for simple, unchallenged authority, especially when things feel complex or deadlocked.
Instead of doing the hard work of democracy and collaboration.
Precisely. Which can be messy and slow.
Yeah.
So this normalization of the idea, even the word dictator, is dangerous. It hints that maybe an autocratic way could be better sometimes.
And this isn't just about one person's words.
No. The source argues it reveals the sheer scale of the crisis of political governance we're in. It's a symptom of a deep unease, maybe a shift towards valuing perceived strength over real wisdom.
Okay, so if that's the tone, if that's the kind of rhetoric flying around, what kind of world does that actually create? What happens to relationships between countries?
Well, the source is pretty blunt about the fallout. It says this approach leads to relationships becoming incredibly fragile. Everywhere.
It's not just theoretical, then. It's what we're seeing.
It argues it is our lived reality.
Yeah.
The world, it says, is already divided into fractured alliances and damaged trust.
And statements based on superiority, we're better, we have the power, we can destroy you, that just makes it worse.
It just deepens those divides. It fuels the mistrust. Politics starts speaking the language of rivalry, constantly pitting nations against each other.
Instead of what? Humility. Compassion.
Exactly. Qualities the source highlights. Instead of leaders trying to build gateways to opportunities for working together on huge global challenges like climate, poverty, health.
They end up building what, walls of suspicion?
Yes, the phrase used. Building walls, strengthening borders, deepening hostility. It's a real barrier to getting anything meaningful done together.
That image, walls versus gateways, is really stark. It shows the choice, maybe the direction we're heading. So what are the specific costs, the real consequences of this?
Oh, they're very real and very damaging. The source lists several key ones. First, trust is weakened between allies and adversaries alike.
Okay, so even your friends start to doubt you.
Absolutely. And trust is the foundation, right? Without it, everything becomes suspicious, unpredictable, makes real diplomacy almost impossible.
What else?
Second, diplomatic bonds are strained when superiority defines the conversation. If one side always acts dominant, implies they have the right to dictate.
The other side just shuts down or pushes back.
Right. You can't have good faith negotiation if your basic dignity feels challenged. It leads to standoffs, resentment, closed communication.
And the third cost.
Maybe the most critical for the future. Future cooperation is eroded when threats replace vision. If all you hear are threats, not shared goals, not a positive vision.
Then why would you partner up long term?
Exactly. There's no room for those constructive partnerships we desperately need for global problems. These aren't small things. They're major cracks in the global order.
It really does sound like words become weapons. The source says public words echo in closed negotiations, in boardrooms, in the silent calculations of nations.
Yeah, they have a long shelf life, those words.
And it leads to governance losing its very essence when words are used as weapons instead of bridges. That's a powerful and, frankly, scary shift.
It is. And this connects directly to another critical point the source makes. We've forgotten the fundamentals of leadership.
The original purpose.
Yeah. Governance started fundamentally to serve, to hold together societies, protect people, and secure futures. That was its noble, essential job.
To ensure humanity could continue flourishing.
Exactly. But today, the source suggests these basic principles, the fundamentals, seem displaced.
Displaced? What does that mean here? How do they get displaced?
It suggests priorities have shifted, the original compass is lost. Many leaders, it seems, get caught in games of survival and optics.
So it's less about genuine stewardship for the future.
And more about keeping power now, managing their image, winning the next political fight, often forgetting the bigger picture, the longer-term goals.
So instead of speaking for progress for everyone,
they speak that language of cards, leverage, and superiority. It's transactional. How can I gain an advantage? Rather than transformative. How can we lift everyone up? Short-term wins over long-term health.
Okay, this is where the source really drills down, right? To the absolute core of the problem.
Yes, this is the central diagnosis.
It states very clearly, this is why the crisis of political governance is not a failure of systems, it is a failure of consciousness.
Boom. That's the linchpin. A massive distinction.
So it's not that democracy is broken or international law or diplomacy itself. Those structures are basically okay.
Largely robust, yes.
Okay.
The problem, the deep problem, is that the clarity of those who guide them has been lost.
Lost clarity. So it's an internal issue within leaders, almost a spiritual problem, affecting how they see things, make decisions, interact.
That's the critical insight from Sandeep Mehra's work. The blueprints, the institutions, they're mostly there. But the mindset, the consciousness of the people operating them has faltered.
And that lost clarity could mean what? Can't see beyond self-interest, no ethical compass, just reacting instead of reflecting.
All of the above, potentially.
Yeah.
It's a profound point because it shifts the focus. It's not just about fixing external systems anymore.
It's about an internal recalibration, a reawakening within leadership.
Exactly. Because if the consciousness guiding the system is foggy, unclear, misaligned, then the system itself, no matter how well designed, just can't work properly. It can't fulfill its real purpose.
So the root problem isn't technical, it's human. It's about how leaders understand their role, their responsibility, their connection to everyone else.
Which calls for a different kind of work, inner work, a different kind of vision for leadership.
Okay, so if the core problem is this failure of consciousness, not just broken systems, what's the way out? What's the solution to something that deep?
Well, the source doesn't just leave us with the problem. It offers a clear direction.
And it's not about just pointing fingers.
No, it specifically says the answer isn't to condemn individuals or silence voices. That just creates more noise, more division.
So what is the answer then?
It's something more fundamental. To reawaken the essence of leadership itself.
Reawaken the essence.
Okay. And this brings us right to the heart of it. The transformative idea pioneered by Sandeep Mehra. Awakened political governance.
Awakened political governance, not just an option, but maybe a necessary next step.
That's how it's presented.
Yeah.
And it's not just a vague concept. The source gives it a really clear definition.
Okay, let's hear it.
First, it's leadership anchored in clarity rather than superiority.
Clarity, not superiority. That's a huge shift from the performance of power idea.
Exactly. It means making decisions from deep understanding, moral coherence, a clear view of the collective good. Not from wanting to dominate or prove you're better, insight over posturing.
Makes sense. What else?
Second, it's governance guided by humility, restraint, and alignment.
Humility, restraint, alignment. Those words feel almost radical in today's politics.
They do, but the source argues they're absolutely essential for real cooperation, stability, wise choices. Humility lets you learn. Restraint stops things escalating. Alignment keeps actions focused on a shared, positive purpose.
Okay, and there was a third part to that definition.
Yes, and this one really flips the script.
Yeah.
It is the choice to see nations not as opponents, but as co-architects of the future.
Co-architects, not opponents playing with cards.
Exactly. It completely inverts that rivalry mindset. It asks leaders to see the whole world community as partners, all bringing unique strengths to build a shared future together.
From competition to co-creation.
But that's it. From self-interested competition to collective visionary co-creation.
Now, here's a key point. Is this just idealistic, nice sounding, but not practical?
That's exactly what the source addresses. It stresses emphatically that awakened political governance is not idealistic. It is practical.
Okay, practical. Why? How?
The logic is compelling. It says, in a world where threats travel faster than dialogue, think pandemics, cyber attacks, climate change, instant fake news.
Yeah. Things move incredibly fast now.
Right. In that kind of world, the only sustainable leadership is one rooted in presence, balance, and trust.
Presence, balance, and trust. Why those three?
Well, without presence, a leader is just reactive, blown about by events. Without balance, they swing wildly, creating instability. And without trust, well, no real cooperation is possible. It all falls apart.
So reactive, unstable leadership just can't cope with today's speed and complexity.
Exactly. It's fundamentally unsustainable. So awakened governance isn't presented as a soft option. It's about building resilience, real problem-solving capacity, a framework for humanity to actually flourish long-term.
It's positioned as the necessary evolution for leadership now.
That's the core message.
That distinction between idealism and practical necessity is really crucial, I think. It grounds it.
It does. It makes it feel actionable.
And speaking of action, this idea of awakened political governance has a direct counterpart in how nations interact, right? Awakened diplomacy.
Yes, it's the natural extension into international relations. It's how awakened governance looks when countries talk to each other.
So how does the source define true diplomacy in this context?
It offers a really insightful definition. It says true diplomacy is not silence or weakness.
Which is how some people might see restraint, maybe, especially if they think strength means being loud and aggressive.
Precisely. The world often equates assertiveness with strength. But awakened diplomacy is defined as the power of restraint.
The power of restraint. Okay, unpack that.
It's not about being passive or scared. It's a conscious, deliberate choice. Acting from wisdom, from careful thought, not just impulse or aggression. It's an inner strength that knows when not to act, when to pause, when to listen deeply.
So strength isn't just about what you can do, like having those cards to destroy.
Right. It's about what you consciously choose not to do. Not holding back from fear, but from a deeper wisdom, a longer view.
That's a profound shift in thinking about power.
It really is. The source elaborates. Awakened diplomacy is the wisdom of leaders who recognize that the ability to destroy is less significant than the choice to preserve.
Wow. Ability to destroy is less significant than the choice to preserve.
Yeah. It challenges that whole conventional, often militaristic idea that power is mainly about force or coercion. It argues real strength, lasting influence, the legacy you leave. That comes from discernment, from the conscious will to protect, to nurture, to maintain life, to build peace that lasts.
It's a total rethink of power on the world stage, from destruction to preservation.
Imagine how many conflicts might have been avoided, how much suffering spared, if that wisdom guided decisions.
So if the power of restraint is the core, what are the actual principles? How does awakened diplomacy look in action day to day?
The source outlines three key aspects. First, choosing presence over posturing.
Presence over posturing, meaning?
Meaning engaging authentically, mindfully, fully aware in diplomatic talks. Not just playing a role, projecting a fake image of strength, or putting on a show for the folks back home. Real engagement.
Okay, what's second?
Valuing trust over temporary advantage.
Trust over advantage. That sounds fundamental.
It is. It means reordering priorities. Understanding that building solid, reliable relationships based on trust pays off way more in the long run than chasing short-term wins or tactical gains that just create resentment later.
Okay, presence over posturing, trust over temporary advantage. And the third?
Building alignment where division seems inevitable.
Ooh, that sounds like the hardest one.
Maybe the most vital, though? Actively looking for common ground, finding shared interests, creating a sense of shared purpose, even when differences look huge or history is full of conflict.
It takes courage to look for connection when everything screams division.
Absolutely. A commitment to finding convergence, even when divergence seems obvious.
And if leaders actually embrace this,
What
happens? What are the results, the outcomes of awakened diplomacy?
The source argues this approach leads to diplomacy that fundamentally heals rather than fractures.
Heals rather than fractures. That's a welcome change from what we often see.
Isn't it? Moving beyond just managing conflict to actually repairing relationships, fostering reconciliation. It's a diplomacy that creates new opportunities rather than closing doors. Because when you focus on collaboration, respect, a shared vision, you naturally find new solutions, new paths for growth together that you'd miss in a fight.
So it opens things up instead of shutting them down.
Exactly. And ultimately, it reinforces that core idea. The deepest power in politics is not destruction, but preservation.
Not just a nice phrase, but a redefinition of political strength.
Radical redefinition, offering a real sustainable way towards a more peaceful, more prosperous world. #, #, a universal call to action and the awakened leadership movement.
Now, it's really important here to zoom out again because the source is crystal clear. This isn't just about one country or one leader.
Absolutely. It stresses this is not an American matter alone.
It sees similar patterns everywhere.
Yes. Across Asia, Africa, Europe, and beyond, similar patterns are evident. It's presented as a truly global phenomenon.
A widespread challenge where leaders everywhere are kind of stuck.
Caught, as the source puts it, between rising authoritarian temptations and the demands of fragile democracies. That tension, that push and pull, is happening worldwide.
And that tension forces a choice.
A fundamental choice. And the source suggests that too often, leaders choose to speak the language of power over the language of presence.
Okay, let's clarify that again. Language of power versus language of presence.
Language of power. Dominance, control, confrontation, leverage, winning, projecting strength, maybe masking insecurity.
Got it. And language of presence.
Mindfulness, authenticity, being grounded in inner wisdom, really engaging, really listening.
So when leaders prioritize projecting power over being truly present,
the consequences are huge, as we've discussed. It shapes everything in international relations.
And what's the ultimate stake here? If this global trend continues, this preference for power talk over presence, what are the deep implications?
This is critical. The source says what is at stake is not only the balance of nations, but the very integrity of governance.
The integrity of governance itself. Meaning
the basic principles societies are built on: trust, fairness, accountability, rule of law. Those get compromised. If governance just becomes that performance of power, not genuine service,
the whole social contract starts to fray.
That's the danger. So the crisis is truly global, affecting everyone. And its resolution, the source insists, cannot come from stronger tools. It must come from awakened leaders.
So better weapons, better treaties, better economic models, those aren't enough on their own.
Not enough to solve this deep crisis. The lasting solution has to come from a shift in consciousness within the leaders themselves. An internal revolution first.
Which brings us right back to the source of these ideas: awakened governance and awakened diplomacy.
Exactly. The source explicitly names Sandeep Mehra as the global pioneer of awakened leadership, awakened governance, and awakened diplomacy.
Not just someone talking about it, but the pioneer, the originator.
Identified as the conceptualizer and the driving force behind these frameworks for a new kind of leadership.
And stemming from that work, he founded the Awakened Leadership Movement.
Yes. And the source describes this movement in really interesting terms. Not just an organization, but a soul-born initiative.
Soul-born. That's evocative. What does that imply?
It's described as a living, breathing movement of consciousness created, guided, and sustained by Sandeep Mehra as its founder and visionary. That immediately sets it apart from typical political groups or NGOs. It suggests a deeper, more organic origin.
So what does soul-born or living movement of consciousness mean in practice? How does it operate?
It suggests its core principles come from a deep inner conviction, not external pressures or standard structures. The source says it stands sovereign, rooted in inner clarity, not external validation.
So its direction comes from within, not from chasing popularity or funding.
That's the idea. Guided by an internal compass, a clear purpose, and while it operates legally under a sole proprietorship, the source stresses it's not a company or commercial entity.
Not about making money.
No. Its essence is a conscious mission, an offering from soul to soul, not system to system. Underscoring its non-conventional, purpose-driven nature, it's about sharing consciousness, sharing wisdom, not commerce.
And contributions are voluntary, just to sustain the mission.
Exactly. Reinforcing that spiritual rather than commercial foundation.
That is a very unique setup. So given that foundation, what's the movement's big goal, its ambition?
It's defined clearly as a global conscious movement redefining leadership worldwide through soul and systems.
Redefining leadership through soul and systems, both.
Yes, that's key. The aim is awakening individuals, transforming governance, nations, visionary enterprises, and societal structures from the inside out and the outside in.
Inside out and the outside in. Explain that.
Inside out. Transforming the individual leader's consciousness, their clarity, their ethics, outside in. Transforming the actual systems, governance, policies, organizations, how they operate.
So it's a holistic approach, believing you need both individual change and systemic change.
Precisely. A comprehensive vision. Transform the inner landscape of leaders to fundamentally change the external landscape of the world.
And the source makes a really strong statement about this work at the end, doesn't it? It elevates it beyond just an idea.
It does. It says, "This is not a reflection or an opinion. This is awakening for leaders, nations, and systems ready to redefine the future of governance and humanity."
Not just another viewpoint, but an essential, urgent call.
Exactly. It frames it as an awakening. Necessary, urgent, especially for those with influence. It implies the stakes are incredibly high.
Yeah.
We need to move beyond just thinking about it towards a real shift in awareness and action. It suggests this isn't just one possible future path, but maybe the necessary evolutionary step for humanity. #outro.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into awakened governance and awakened diplomacy, let's just quickly recap the journey we've been on.
It's been quite a journey.
We started by looking square in the face of this crisis in political governance today, how rhetoric often becomes a performance of power,
leading to those fractured relationships, that forgetting of why leadership even exists to serve.
We saw how things like talking about cards to destroy nations or casually mentioning dictators aren't just slips of the tongue.
No, they signal a global shift towards strategy, control, often losing sight of cooperation, trust, shared governance.
But then the solution offered by Sandeep Mehra isn't just more rules or systems.
No, it's this profound reawakening from within. Awaken political governance leadership based on clarity, humility, restraint, alignment.
Seeing nations as co-architects, not opponents.
Exactly. And awaken diplomacy, showing that real strength is in restraint. the wisdom to preserve, not destroy, choosing presence, building trust.
And reminding ourselves that this whole approach comes from Sandeep Mehra, the pioneer, and the Awakened Leadership Movement he founded.
That unique soul-born initiative working to redefine leadership through both soul and systems, inside out and outside in.
And all of this leaves you, our listener, with some really big, urgent questions. Questions the Source itself raises for us to think about.
Questions we probably all need to sit with.
Like, what kind of political governance are we preparing to hand to the next generation? Are we leaving them division or a foundation for working together?
What kind of relationships will nations sustain if trust keeps fracturing like this? Can we even have global stability if that continues?
And maybe the most chilling, what kind of future are we shaping if leaders casually speak of destruction and dictatorship as just normal vocabulary?
These aren't just abstract thoughts. They demand our attention, our engagement.
They really do. It's a call for reflection, for maybe a renewed sense of responsibility for all of us.
And the Source puts it so powerfully. The crisis is not in the cards. The crisis is not in the word dictator. The crisis is in forgetting why we lead at all.
Forgetting why we lead. Wow. A fundamental forgetting of purpose.
It reminds us this awakening isn't just for presidents or prime ministers. It's about the consciousness guiding leadership everywhere, in all parts of life.
So we'll leave you with this final thought, a really resonant one from Sandeep Mehra's work.
The greatest power any leader holds is not the ability to destroy, but the wisdom to preserve.
And the legacy of our time will not be measured in the cards we played, but in the trust we carried forward.
Think about how that applies, not just on the world stage, but in your own life, your community, your work, your family, however big or small your influence is.
What trust are you choosing consciously to carry forward? And what kind of future might that trust help build?
Something to ponder. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
Thank you.